Hi, I'm Caroline. I'm a recovered addict. And I'm also Fred and Jim and the jaywalker and the man of 30. And I've just said that for Tom's benefit. I've got something to tell you. Because something's happened to me. I'm very emotional now after KJ's lovely talk. Something's happened to me. For a start, now, right now, today, I haven't injected any heroin. Yay! Today, and for quite a few days that have added up to quite a few years, I haven't injected any heroin, and that is my favourite thing to do in the world. And I also haven't sniffed any powders, licked any rocks, popped any pills, haven't even smoked a joint, man. Today, and for quite a few days, that's added up to quite a few years. This is a miracle. This is amazing. I haven't drank any vodka, high-strength lager, or nail varnish remover, because that's what type of alcoholic I am. I haven't done that today. For quite a few days, that's added up to quite a few years. And you see, when I got to Cocaine Anonymous, that's all I wanted. That is all I wanted to happen. So much more than that. So much more than that's happened to me. And so say today, for example, I haven't had the need to lie or withhold any information, withhold any truth. I just haven't had that need today. To withhold any information or tell any lies. I haven't taken anything that doesn't belong to me or made somebody give me something that belongs to them. I haven't had the need to dominate someone's thinking, to bring it around to my way of thinking. I just haven't had to do that today and for quite a few days. I haven't got into any conflict with anybody today. And for quite a few days, I haven't had any conflict. Stop fighting, man. And this is all as a result of working the 12 steps in Cocaine Anonymous. And it wasn't, do you know what? It wasn't always like this. You know, like how I say, like, I'm Jim and I'm Fred and I'm Bill and I'm the man of 30 and I'm the jaywalker. I know that now. But when I first came to 12-step fellowship, I did not know that. Because, oh, I forgot to start my timer. Hang on, I'm going to start it because I do go on. I do. They're laughing because they know me. So I first came to 12-step fellowship, I was 23 years old, and it wasn't this fellowship, because this wasn't invented yet, but it was full of these old men with their books talking about God. And I was like, ugh. I was like, no. I know, this is not for me. And I thought I should be dancing on bars in Magaluf or something. This is not for me. It was very uncool. And well, the thing is, I'd never danced on a bar in Magaluf. I was at the current time, I was living in a homeless hostel, a Salvation Army hostel. My family had completely disowned me. My boyfriend was dead, and my criminal record was growing bigger and bigger and bigger by the week. I still thought this wasn't for me. And it's just so weird because for the next 10 years, I sought out easier, softer options. And now here I am today, an older woman with my book. I'm going to talk about God. Yeah. And so if when I do that, you're sat there thinking, this is lame, welcome. Right? You might be in the right place. Oh, I was appalled. I was truly appalled. But what happened over those 10 years, I had some experiences and I learned some things that I was later able to put into context. Because I tried lots and lots of things. I tried lots of things to control and enjoy my using. And some of them were quite good. Some of them were quite a little bit successful. For a while, I can stop. For a while, I could stop and I could build my life up and I could get things together and everything would be going great. And then I would just have a glass of wine. Or something, because what harm could that do? And And this kind of cycle repeated itself and repeated itself and repeated itself. You see, what I learned in those 10 years of looking for easier, softer options, I'm really good at stopping. I'm really good at stopping. I can stop, man. Stopping's not the problem. I mean, sometimes I even stop like 5 times in one day. That's how good I am at stopping. But seriously, I could stop for a period. I could maybe, you know, I would go into a treatment facility or a mental health facility, or I would just go away somewhere or move to a different town, get a new boyfriend, all those kind of things. And I can stop for a bit. And the truly most insane thing I've ever, ever done in my life is to pick up after a period of abstinence. And that's weird, because I've done some really insane things when I'm using. Like, I used to smoke crack with my little friend Bart. He's dead now as well. And I would be convinced that he was putting bits of rock under his fingernail. And we were dirty junkies, man. We were dirty junkies, homeless hostel junkies. And then I would force him to scrape out his fingernails into the pipe so that I could smoke it. I know, I've done some quite insane things in my life, but the most insane thing that I've ever done is picked up a substance after a period of abstinence, believing that this time is going to be different. The most insane thing. And I did it again and again and again and again. And I kept doing it again and again and again. Every time I did it, I couldn't see what I was doing. And it wasn't until I came here to this fellowship and I sat down next to a woman, and she said, "I like your handbag." And I went, "Will you be my sponsor?" It's true. It's true. And she started to read the big book with me. And this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to share my experience of what's happened to me, you know, because something's definitely happened to me that's almost inexplicable. And it's absolutely miraculous what's happened. So I just want to describe my experience. And if you're new or if you don't yet identify as recovered, I'm talking to you, really. I'm talking to you guys. I'm talking to the people who are new or don't identify as recovered or haven't had a spiritual experience for whatever reason. I'm talking to you, or maybe had a spiritual experience and then kind of got distracted, because we do that. And I'm talking to you. So she started reading the big book to me, and she started talking about this physical allergy, an abnormal reaction to mind-altering substances. And I thought, maybe I do. I'm an identical twin. There's another one of me. Our DNA is identical. We should have been one baby. We should have been one person. And she's not an addict. She uses, like a lady. So when this woman started talking to me about her physical allergy to mind-altering substances, I was like, this kind of makes sense. I had my sister in mind, my beautiful sister, I had her in mind, and I thought, this kind of makes sense, because I do react differently. I react differently to my sister and my husband. I react differently to most of my friends, actually. I react differently to them. And, you know, she described it as this physiological need for more. And I understand it now. It's a bit like, it's an involuntary action, like blinking. It's just like blinking. My body just needs to do it. And for a while, I can do it now. I can really concentrate on not blinking. I can really concentrate. I'm really thinking now, don't blink, Caroline, don't blink. Eventually, even when I'm thinking, don't blink, my body just blinks. This is exactly the same as the physical allergy. I can really concentrate on, don't use, Caroline, just don't use. I can really concentrate. And for a while, I can just not use. But eventually, just the same as blinking or breathing, my body just needs to do it, man. That's what my physical allergy looks like. Ordinary people don't have this experience. They just don't. Like, my husband's so weird. He buys a gram of cocaine and he does a line and then he puts it in his pocket. And he goes home and he saves it for another day. I know. I mean, when I was using, I'd be like, I'll look after it. and then he'd be like, where's that gear? And I'd be like, I don't know. You didn't give it to me. I don't know. You didn't give it to me. Anyway, but that's what ordinary people do. That's not my experience. So this allergy idea really made sense to me. I was like, yeah, an allergy. And also, I'm very allergic to cats, so I get it. I understand an abnormal reaction. I understand that I have an abnormal reaction to cats. Does anybody else have an abnormal reaction to cats? Yes, and my face swells up, and my eyes swell up, and I can't breathe properly, and it's just awful. And this is the second part of the illness that my sponsor told me that she suffered from. She didn't tell me that I suffered from it. She told me that she suffered from it. You see, if a cat walked in here now, it's unlikely, I know, but if a cat did walk in here now, absolutely, for definitely 100% sure, my mind says to me, don't touch the cat. Don't touch the cat, it'll make you ill. I don't touch the cat. My mind never, ever, ever says to me, well, it's been a long time. It's been a whole 3 months since you touched a cat. And my mind never says to me, well, this cat is ginger. The last cat was black. I think you and the ginger cat are gonna be fine. My mind never says to me, just for this Friday, just for this weekend, you're going to be all right with a cat. That doesn't happen. With my allergy to cats, that doesn't happen. It's not a thing. I'm 100% sane around my allergy to cats. And this is the second part of this illness. And this is what makes it fatal, because all of those things happen with mind-altering substances. My mind is going to lie and delude and trick and collude with itself to get me to pick up a mind-altering substance. And when I was like, this woman was talking about this, and we were talking about cats, and we were talking about the difference, and this me keeping on picking up for years and years and years and years, picking up mind-altering substances after periods of absence, and I was like, yeah. And the penny just dropped like this, and I was like, oh, that's why they're talking about God. That's it. Because if my mind is my problem, I need something greater than my mind. I need something higher than my mind to sort the problem out. Because if my mind's always, always going to lie, delude, trick and collude with itself to get me to pick up a mind-altering substance, something higher than my mind is necessary. So my step two experience wasn't, like it says in the book, yes, I'm now willing to believe. It was like, there better be one. There needs to be one. There needs to be a God. And that was my step two experience. And it's just so amazing, isn't it? Because I was so close to this idea. I was so close to this idea of spiritual life. And it's like the book says, isn't it? Accept spiritual help or be doomed to an alcoholic death. They're not always easy alternatives to face. How true that is. How true that is for us. And, you know, I remember the very first ever proper... I mean, I'd love to say that after this experience with this sponsor in the book, I just stopped using it and launched into a vigorous course of action. I didn't. I went and just tested out the allergy theory for a little bit longer. And just to be sure that I definitely had it, I did. And I ended up back in an institution for 2 weeks. And my very, very first ever, ever sincere prayer... It wasn't a very good prayer, but it went like this. It went... I can't, he can't, let him. I can't, he can't, let him. And I said this as a mantra for 48 hours. And then something happened. Something happened to me. It wasn't even a very good prayer, really. It was just, I can't, he can't, let him. I can't, he can't, let him. And the medication doctor at the unit that I was in came with some Valium. I love Valium. I just love Valium. They're like my second favourite or something. And he had some Valium in his hand, and he held his hand out, and he said, there's your medication. And this voice came out of me, like, I don't want it. And I was like, who said that? Because that's not what I say. That's not what I say when someone's got a hand with Valium in it. I said, that's not enough. I'm really ill. I need more than that. I was done, man. This thing had happened to me. I was done. The obsession had been removed. You see, all of my life I've been obsessed and compelled and enthralled with the idea of using and using more. That's all of my life, just how I've been. And there in that moment, that ended. I don't think it was anything that I did apart from that very, very simple prayer, that admittance of defeat that I'd got from the information from the big book and that very, very simple prayer. And from there, I started out on this journey, really, because you've got the problem with step one and then you've got the solution with step two. And then I started out on this journey. And this step three idea of turning my will and my life over to the care of God, I'm like, what? What? Like, I'm just an old smackhead from Hull. I don't even know what that means. And the people in this lovely fellowship have just explained things to me so well. And what I know about the step three prayer, and what I really need to tell you about the step three prayer, is there's a line in it that says, take away my difficulties, take away my difficulties. And it's not saying take away my difficulties so I can get on with the programme. It's not saying take away my difficulties so that I can have a nice life. It's saying take away my difficulties so that victory over them will bear witness to those I would help. Yeah? Bear witness, thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. So right from the beginning, right from step three, what this is about is me helping other people, right from the beginning. So if you are new or you haven't finished working the 12 steps, please don't think that you've got to wait to step 12 to start helping people. That's not what this is about. That's really not what this is about. And then, so this is the step three idea of, like, I've just opened my mind up to this power greater than me, God, Allah, Abba, Mother, Father, creative intelligence, Ganesha, whatever it is, there's many, many paths up the mountain, the view from the top is the same, it doesn't even matter which path you take. I just opened my mind to this idea. So in step three, I'm making a bit of a deal. And once this deal is made, I believe I can only go forward with it. I could only go forward with it. So I started this inventory, and it seemed a bit involved, to be fair. It seems like it was a bit much, really, like a lot of writing. And I did it, and it was long. And, oh, God, I found some things out. I found out I'm a dramatic and hysterical overreactor. Who knew? Who knew? It was quite a shock. But I also found out, more importantly, I just make things up, man. I just make things up. Like, I just look at people. I just look at someone and think they don't like me. They don't like me. Well, I don't like them, actually. And then they've been talking about me. I can tell they're talking about me. I bet it's because that one over there has been telling them this about me. I bet they're doing that because of this. I just make things up, man. And then I forget the I bet, and it becomes a fact. They have been talking about me. Well, I'm going to talk about them. And then couple this with the fact that I'm a dramatic and hysterical overreactor, and it just made for a lifetime of collision with people. I didn't like people, man. I just didn't like them. But it was mainly down to me making things up and overreacting. And then I also found out some other things. Oh, my God. You see, you know, when I first was coming to meetings and I would hear people talking about selfish, self-centered, that is the root of our problems, I'd be like, what? What? I don't know what that meant. But then it's not until you... It wasn't until I kind of like understood what selfishness was that I realised, oh my God, I'm really selfish. I didn't know there was another way of living. I just didn't know. It didn't occur to me. And I remember writing this inventory, and it was right at the very end. And, you know, I'd written loads, and there was some little things right at the end. And there was this shop that I used to work in. And there was a woman who worked in the shop with me, and she was really precious about the till adding up. She always had to have the till adding up. And it never added up when I was there. To make other people laugh, because she used to get really annoyed about it not adding up, and she used to get her hair off. And so to make other people laugh when she was not looking, I used to go like this on the buttons to the till, and just press loads of buttons, and make people laugh. It made people laugh, and that meant they liked me. And I was writing this down on a harms inventory sheet, and it was like somebody kicked me in the chest. And I'd written loads of other stuff on this inventory. You know, some quite horrific stuff was on the inventory. But this one, it was like somebody kicked me in the chest, and I was like, oh, my God. I saw the extent to which I'll use human beings to get a sense of self. And I rang my sponsor at the time, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm so selfish. It was a proper revelation. I was like, oh, my God, I'm so selfish. And she just went, I know. And I was like, I don't think you realise. I've had a real revelation. I've had a spiritual experience. And but I just really saw, man. And, you know, it's funny. It's so peculiar. You know, this is how deluded I am, because it took that for me to experience how selfish I am. I had two kids while I was using, because I thought they were going to stop me from using. That's how selfish I really am. I didn't see it. That's the extent to which I'll use human beings to get what I want. I deliberately got pregnant when I was using, thinking, oh, this will stop me. It didn't. Well, the first one didn't stop me, so I thought I'll have another one. Second one definitely stopped me. That's the extent to which I use human beings. So this selfishness and self-centeredness, and it's just, you know, I know that you can't know it until you know it. You can't know it until you know it. I was just so consumed with myself, I didn't even know that selfish was a thing, because I didn't know there was an alternative. So I read this step five out, and, you know, the step five promises talk about, after we finished our step five, be alone at perfect peace and ease. I wasn't. Feeling like we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit, I didn't feel like that. I was disgusted with myself, actually. I despised myself. What I had written down in front of me, it wasn't who I thought I was. It really wasn't. I thought I was lovely with a bit of a drug problem, and this writing in front of me. And I faced this utter defeat again. You know, like the defeat that I faced in step one where I realised, oh, I need something higher than me. I faced this utter defeat again after my step five. And I realised, oh, this is what step six and seven is all about. I need something higher than me with my living, with my spirit life. So I started doing this spirit work, you know, in the amends process. Oh, my God. It's just insane, isn't it? I don't like saying sorry. I don't like it. I'm like, sorry. Oh, it chokes me a bit. I don't like it. But my sponsor got me to write these lists of now, later, maybe, and never. I'm going to do these now, these later, these maybe, these never, ever doing that, these ones. And I did it, and it was a long list. And then I went back to her, and she said, okay. She said, well done, Caroline. Who do you hate? Who do you hate on this list? And I said, that woman there. Hate her. She could burn her house down with her children in it. I hated her. And she was on the never list. And my sponsor said, okay, ring her. And I was like, I think you'll see she's on the never list. And my sponsor said, yeah, well, I think you'll see that you agreed at the beginning to go to any lengths for victory over alcoholism. And she was clever because at the beginning when she started sponsoring me, it's still here now, she got me to write in the front of my book here, I agree to go to any lengths for victory over alcoholism, and she got me to sign it and date it. So she kind of had me. And I was like, oh God, I can't. This woman had done the worst thing in the world. I'm laughing. But at the time, what she did to me, it was the worst possible thing in the world she'd done to me. And I was like, I don't want to ring her. I don't want to. And she was like, you owe her amends. You need to ring her. In the big book, the amends are in this order, and it starts off with approaching the person you hated. And I was like, I don't want to ring her. I don't want to ring her. And she's like, you're going to ring her. And I was like, I don't want to ring her. She's like, you're going to ring her. So I rang her, but I rang her like this. You know, when you ring someone, you're like, please don't answer. Please don't answer. Please don't answer. And she answered after about three rings. She answered. And she was like, oh, my God, I'm so pleased you've rang. And I was like, can I come and talk to you? And she was like, yeah, please do, please do. She'd been trying to contact me for months. She'd been trying to contact me after she did this thing. She'd been trying to contact me to say sorry. I turned up at her house, and she was like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for what I did. I'm so sorry for what I did. Something happened to me. Something happened to me, and I was like, we're not here to talk about that. I'm going to tell you what she did, right, because it sounds like a big, bad thing. What she did was, she'd been my best friend for 17 years, and she tried to help me to stop using. And she'd looked after the kids for me. She would find counsellors on the internet and take me. She would take me to units and treatment facilities, and she would lie to my husband for me. She lied to the police for me. I just used to take my kids to her house and go, look after the kids while I go to a meeting. And then 3 days later, wake up and think, where are the kids? I can't remember where I've left them. I knew they'd be at her house. And one day, she said, do you know what, Caroline? If you don't stop now, I'm going to tell everyone. I'm going to tell everyone. And I was like, yeah. Just look after the kids. Yeah. Just look after the kids. Here's 20 quid. Look after the kids. And she went on Facebook. And she did a post saying, everybody listen, Caroline needs your help. She's a drug addict. And it was out. It was, my secret was out, and that's what she did. And I hated her for doing this. I hated her because all of the school mums knew, all of my work colleagues knew, all of my everybody in the whole of Facebook land knew. I hated her, and I made up this big story that actually she's in love with my husband and she's just trying to split us up, and I have got a tiny little drug problem, but it's fine, don't worry. We must hate her. We must all hate her. And damage limitation, you see, I was very good at damage limitation, and I made everybody hate her, and I made everybody fall out with her, and, you know, this is what I was going to make amends for. So I'm stood at her door, and she's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry for what I did, I'm so sorry for what I did, and something happens to me, man. And I said, do you know what? All you did was tell the truth. All you did was tell the truth. I'm here to make amends for what I've done. Something happened to me. And what I saw in doing this amends first, what I experienced actually was the true nature of humanness. I saw, I felt and experienced love and compassion and forgiveness and humility. And my sponsor's point in making this amends first was, how can you go and make amends to like your mum and your sister and the other ones where they're just going to go, oh, you're doing really well, just keep doing what you're doing. How can you go and make those amends to people while you've still got hate in your heart? So she said, this is the one we're doing first. I'm so glad that's the one I did first. What an experience. And I went and did all the rest of them. And now, there's one that I haven't done because I don't know where he is, but if I ever find him, I'll make it. I'll absolutely definitely make it. That's off the original list. Obviously, there's more just from living life with people. And then we get to step 10. My step 10 experience, it's just amazing, isn't it? Because I continue to watch for selfishness, resentment, dishonesty, and fear. Continue to watch for resentment. That's me thinking about you and you, me thinking about you. And watch for selfishness, me thinking about me. Fear, me thinking about me with you. And dishonesty, just me thinking, basically. Just watch out. Just watch out for thinking. And it's just amazing, isn't it, step 10? Because I do this because I'm still in a position of defeat. I still have got a deep, deep knowing that I'm doomed to an alcoholic death. So I'm going to continue to watch. And I'm going to continue to turn my thoughts to others, to ask God to remove whatever nonsense it is that's going on in my thinking. And continue to make amends. It's like the whole of a program. It's like the whole of the program, isn't it, on a daily basis. And then we've got to step 11. And I've got to just tell you, I'm just not a meditating type. I'm just not really a meditating type. And when I came here, it was like, I just thought it was a bit weird and a bit awkward, really. And I tried lots of different things. And this is the amazing thing about step 11. Out there in the real world with ordinary people, there's so many people who are living a spiritual life. There's so many people who are living different versions of spiritual lives, and they're really happy living that life. They're really happy to share it with us. They're really happy to teach us what they know. And they're not doing it because it's like number 11 in a list of instructions and they're going to die if they don't do it. They're doing it just because it's a cool way of living. It's just a cool and lovely way of living. So I went out and I started looking for these different teachers and I tried loads of different things. And I found out that I really like things like chanting and gong baths. And I really like it and it really lifts my spirit. And dancing meditation, I was like, it's amazing with dancing and chanting really loud, top of your voice, singing with all your heart. And all of these things really lifted my spirit, really lifted my spirit. Like, this is absolutely amazing. I started doing a lot of that. And then I went on this retreat at this nunnery, weirdly. I just like found myself in a nunnery in the middle of the Gloucestershire countryside. And there was this French man who was leading it. And he said, okay, we're going to give ourselves the gift of silence until tomorrow after dinner. And I was like, what? What? I thought I was going to die, honestly. I thought I was properly going to die. My arm was hurting. And I was like, oh, I think I'm having a heart attack. I don't think I can do it. But I was there. I was just there in this like weird little nunnery with these quiet people and like eating food. And oh, what an experience. What an experience. Silence. And I've got this like, dedicated and disciplined practice now. I still do the gonging and the chanting. I do still do that. But I've got this daily dedicated, disciplined practice which involves silence. And one of the greatest gifts of my recovery is being able to be alone at perfect peace and ease in silence. Something's happened to me. My empty spirit has been filled. My broken heart has been mended. And my noisy, noisy brain has been quiet. And I don't know if it's necessarily the meditation method or if it's the discipline and dedication to a meditation method. I don't know what it is. But I know that everything's changed. The way that I dress has changed. The way that I eat has changed. The music that I listen to has changed. What I watch on the internet has changed. What I watch on the television has changed. Everything has changed. The way that I drive my car has changed. Everything has changed. Then get to think about step 12, and you know, I think about my beautiful sponsees, and I think about the beautiful women that I help, and we've got ages yet, it's fine. I'm just checking. And you know, I sponsor women, and I love sponsoring women, and I love going through the book with them, and this is just the start of the step 12, and you know, the book starts talking about working with others, and my sponsees, they fall into two categories. I love sponsoring women. I love being of service to women, well, and men actually. I sponsor men if they need to be sponsored. They fall into two categories, my sponsees, because they ring, don't they? They ring me with their little boo-hoos and calamities. And my answer's always the same. Whatever the boo-hoo or calamity is, my answer is always the same. Do more. Do more prayer, do more meditation, do more inventory, do more service. My answer's always the same. I might be a bit like, oh, there, do more. And so they fall into two categories. There's the ones that do more, and we got on great. And they're the ones that are like, you're so unsympathetic. I just needed someone to listen to me, and we don't get on so well. So I'm a do more. I'm a do more person. I am a do more person. And if you're a do more person, we'll get on. We'll get on great. And if you're not a do more person, we'll still get on, but maybe not as great as the do more people. And that's just the first little part of step 12. Do you know what? I'm so grateful to Cocaine Anonymous for affording me the opportunity to live in the spirit of service. Because that's what this is all about. It's changed my life, man. It's changed my life. And, you know, I've done convention service and I've done hospitals and institution service. And where my heart really lies is with public information. You know, woohoo! Woo! You know, like, we're sat here today and we're having a celebration of recovery and we're celebrating unity and we're connecting with each other and we're having a great time and it's fantastic. Do you know, within a kilometre of here, someone's dying and they don't even know that we're here. That's who I want to reach. Within a kilometre of here, a mother is watching her daughter spiral into oblivion. She doesn't even know that we're here. A dad is watching his son die. They don't know we're here. Having a convention of Cocaine Anonymous, celebrating the fact that we're here and we're free. That's who I want to reach. That's where my spirit leads me. That's what spirit says. You have to find these people. You have to tell. It's great. You know, my home group is amazing. I love being of service in my home group. It's little. There's about six or seven of us. And you know, there's Pietro has just picked up his 60-day key ring. Carl's just picked up his 30-day key ring. Alex has just broken both of his arms while he was training for an Ironman, and he's all right. He's like, yeah, it's fine. Just go for a walk with a dog. It's fine. Having 2 weeks off work. My little home group, Jen, a woman who I sat with for years, wondering, God, is she ever going to get this? She's nearly a year. And then Sarah, lovely Sarah, I used to go and pick her up. I used to sit outside her house and ring and go, outside, Sarah. And she'd be like, yeah, I can't come to the meeting. I haven't got any toothpaste. And I'd be like, I've got toothpaste in the car, Sarah. And she'd be like, okay, I'll be out in a minute. And then like 45 minutes later, she'd come out like that. Like that all. She's just about to celebrate 2 years. This is my home group. I love being of service. And then there's Kelly, who just... Please all pray. Kelly is just coming to the end of the long, dark night. She's just coming to the end of it. So I love being of service in my home group, but the thing is, my home group members, they already know that we're here and we're free. We all know that we're here and we're free. What about the people out there that don't know? You know, hospitals and institutions is great. It is really good, and I love doing hospitals and institutions service, but they already know that we're here and we're free. They already know. I want to find the people who have never, ever heard of us. And you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised at the amount of professionals in frontline services who are like, Cocaine Anonymous, what? What's that? The amount of prescribing doctors who've never heard of us. You'd be surprised. So if anybody does want to get involved in any public information, I've got lots of stuff that I can share with you. If you want to get started at home group level, if you want to get started at your district level, or please come and talk to me afterwards. Please come and talk to me, because I really could. And do you know what? I was just thinking about, while I'm talking about this, and I'm just looking out at all of you beautiful people, and I just kind of feel a bit compelled to talk about just my experience of, you know, like listening to all the fifth steps and listening to friends' stories and listening to, you know, sponsees with their boo-hoos and calamities. Do you know what? I forgive you all. I understand. For whatever you've done, I forgive you all. And I think this is one of the hardest things that I've had to kind of like do for myself, is to forgive myself. Because I just despised myself, man. I just despised myself. Especially around the mothering stuff that KJ talked about. I just thought I was a despicable human being. I was ill. So this is why I'm saying, every single person in the room, I understand. Whatever it is that you've done, whatever it is, I understand. And I forgive you for whatever it is. But what I'd really, really like is for you all to be able to forgive yourselves. That's kind of like my dream and hope, is that we can all just have a real deep understanding of this illness. That we were ill, we went bad. All of the things that I did in pursuit of drugs and happiness, because I was ill, not because I was bad. And that's where my forgiveness comes from. That is where my forgiveness comes from. So all of you, I love you. I love you from the bottom of my heart, and I forgive you all for anything that you've ever done. I love Cocaine Anonymous so much. It's just an extraordinary journey with breathtaking views. I love you all. Thank you.